recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for being here for another episode of Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
And I want to thank my co-hosts, as always, for being here with me. Hello to Kelly, Ken, Robert, and Bobby Neer. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay, well, before I begin my summary of this episode, I'm sure Robert has a clip to play for us, so go ahead, Robert.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Joey Crown, musician with an odd, intense face, whose life is a quest for impossible things, like flowers in concrete, or like trying to pluck a note of music out of the air and put it under glass to treasure. Joey Crown, musician with an odd, intense face, who in a moment will try to leave the earth and discover the middle ground, the place we call the Twilight Zone.
Thank you, Robert. Oh, I always get goosebumps. I always get goosebumps from those opening narrations. Well, today's episode is called The Passage for Trumpet, and it stars the amazing actor Jack Klugman. Now, I hate to sound biased, but anything with Jack Klugman gets a good rating from me. I love Jack Klugman. And in this episode, he plays a down-and-out trumpet player named Joey Crown, who is despondent and on the verge of suicide. He can't get a gig anywhere because he's been known to hit the bottle a little bit too much. So in the first scene, he's trying to convince the club manager to give him a second chance because he's never had a real break. And he even says, I don't even have a girl. You know, he says, I don't even have a girl. And unfortunately, a bottle of booze falls out of his trumpet case. And that just about does it for him right then and there. So Joey then ends up having a fatal accident by walking in front of a moving truck. And that takes his life. After that, he tries to talk to various people who don't see or hear him because he's dead. He's dead. So he finally meets a man who also plays the trumpet and who can hear and can see him. His name is Gabe. Joey is thrilled, and when Gabe asks Joey to play, he does so beautifully. Gabe convinces Joey that his life is actually worth something. Maybe a little bit of the It's a Wonderful Life idea, but without all the fluff, because there wasn't enough time for that. So Joey tells Gabe that he wanted to end his life because he thought there was nothing left for him. There was nothing left to look forward to. And Gabe shows him otherwise. He shows him that, you know, there is something to look forward to. So Joey ends up going back to the scene of the accident, and this time he survives. Not only does he survive, but he meets what will most likely be the woman of his dreams. A woman named Nan, who fell in love with his trumpet playing and most likely fell in love with Joey. I think the feeling was mutual. They fell in love with each other. So Joey had finally come to grips with his life. It was a crazy way to do it, you know, but it worked out for the best overall. And I give this episode a good rating. I mean, I love anything starring Jack Klugman, and this episode is no exception. So I say, well done. And I'm going to send this over to Kelly.
Okay, thanks. Hey, one of the things that Lynn left out in her summary, though, that I think is an important point that
I think I left a lot of things out.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I think is important to note that before Joey gets into that accident, he goes into a pawn shop and he sells his trumpet.
That's right.
The guy gives him, like, you know, a menial amount of money for it, but then puts it in the window for a lot more. And
$25. $25.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's really kind of the last straw, and that's what makes him just kind of not pay attention as he walks into the street. Because I don't think he was necessarily trying to commit suicide, but I think he just wasn't paying attention because he didn't care anymore. But I enjoyed this episode, too. I mean, you know, I'm with Lynn on this. I've always enjoyed Jack Klugman in things that he's been in. And he is, I think, a very good actor. He certainly has played the gamut of roles over time. And I enjoyed this one, too, just because, you know, anytime you see something that has to do with a musician, I enjoy it because I'm a musician myself. And so, that kind of gave it an extra special charm to me. And I liked seeing it, how he went through this whole thing with the angel and realized that, no, he did want to live. And it was interesting also to point out that he wasn't actually dead. The angel told him that you are in the in-between place where you get to decide. And he said, the people that you're trying to talk to, they actually are dead. They just don't realize it. That's why they're here, because they haven't realized they're dead yet. And he said, he told Joey that he had a choice. And Joey finally realized that he wanted to go back. And the driver of the car feels, or the truck feels very badly that he hit Joey. And he gives Joey a bunch of money, you know, saying, well, you know, are you okay? And Joey says, yeah. And he says, well, here's some money. You know, please don't tell the cops about it or anything, because I'll lose my job. And Joey ran back in there and bought his trumpet back. And that's what led to him playing his trumpet on the roof that night. And because he was playing it without drinking, because that was something else that, you know, that was why he was having such a hard time getting gigs, was that when he drank, he couldn't play his trumpet real well.
Exactly.
But you could hear him playing his trumpet, and he was playing it beautifully. And it was because he wasn't drinking anymore, you know, because he had realized he had a new lease on life. And then this cute chick comes walking up there and tells him she likes his trumpet playing and says she's new in town. And he says, well, why don't I show you around? And she says, oh, I'd like that. And, you know, it's you know, you don't get a happy ending.
So he finally gets a girl.
Exactly. You know, you don't see happy endings very often with the Twilight Zone. So every once in a while, when you get to see a happy ending, it's kind of a nice change of pace. And I liked it. I gave it a rating of a 4 for excellent.
Cool.
So we will move it on to, is it
Ken.
Robert?
No, Ken.
Ken,
and then Robert.
Ken. Okay. I know, Ken, you hated this, so let's hear why you hated it. Because Ken hates just about everything.
Well, I'm picky and peculiar. I've said that before. But the first thing I've got to do on this show, you guys know me, and it's been a long, long time since our last show, but we've got to promote our excellent award-winning book that has been published by Wasteland Press called The Twilight Zone Revisited and Reviewed, Volume 1. This is a collector's edition, and it's got the reviews of Bobby Neer, Kelly, Lynn, and myself, and we go over all 36 episodes, and we give our opinions, and we opine on all the subjects, and even give alternate suggestions. So all those people out there in Twilight Zone land and in TalkShoe, go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble. You got to get this book. And we want to let you know that the seasons 2 through 5 will also be published. They'll take a while, but...
Gotta get this book.
Yes. And just for the cover, we've got Mr. Henry Bemis on the front, and we've got the hitchhiker on the back. And you're going to be surprised. Volume 2, we're going to come up with a classic photo for the front, and also another classic photo from the back on season 2.
Now, don't be putting my photo up on there. Don't be putting my photo up on there. I know you. Now, don't be putting my photo up on there.
As far as the our present episode today, A Passage for Trumpet. Just a second. That's my wife in the other room. Okay. It didn't knock my socks off.
Oh, gosh, I think that's one of the nicer things you said about episode 10.
Did your dog bark while watching it, or was dog okay with it?
Oh, that's right. I'm checking with my dog, and not much reaction from the dog. I will give credit to Rod Serling for entering the field of music and religion. And this is something unique about the Twilight.
Wait. Did you say Rob Serling?
Rod.
All right. I thought you said Rob, because I was going to smack you down if you said it his name wrong. All right,
no,
okay.
Rod Serling. I'm here in California. I know you're in Pennsylvania, and that's a
long ways away.
Okay.
I'm just checking
it's
on
about,
you. All right. I got to check on you all the time, yeah.
Yeah, 3,000 miles. Also, I want you know, when you move out to the West Coast, I want to give you a welcome to the West Coast, and also a welcome to Pacific Standard Time, okay?
I guess. Are you giving me a welcome to the rain as well? All right, okay. Go ahead.
All right. I gave this a rating of 2. I'm not going to give a lousy, and I'm not going to give an excellent.
Oh, wait a minute.
I think you gave it a rating of 1. Yeah,
yep.
Thank you.
I checked the reviews yesterday.
You gave it a rating of 1. Don't
I did?
Back out. No, you can't
yes,
do that.
Yes, you did. That's why I said I know you hate the episode, because I knew you gave it a rating
don't
of a
you,
1.
That's right. Don't you dare back out. You,
all right.
Once you
well,
give
like
a rating, you have to stick with it.
So what changed there, Ken? Why give you that extra up rating?
Yeah. No, thank you, Robert. Yeah.
Well, wait a minute, Ken. If you think this is worthy of a 2, but you initially told us it was worthy of a 1, why don't you explain why you're upping it to a 2? What is it that made you decide that it wasn't as bad as you thought it was?
Music. Rod Serling did get
what
into a
that
another
to do with
field.
Anything?
And
what the hell does music have to do with anything?
Well, like I said, you know, by watching the first season, we have seen so many different areas of life, mainly space. We've gotten into the devil. We've gotten into religion. We've gotten into duplicates. We've gotten into the bookworm. We've gotten into relationships. We got into that sappy story about the
You're
love
still
potion.
Not telling me why you upped it from a 1 to a 2. I'm sorry. Give me a reason why you're upping it from a 1 to a 2. Don't tell me the music. What the hell does the music have to do with anything?
Because the music, the trumpet, I like the tune he was playing.
How come you didn't like it
the
first time?
Well, I'll tell you why. It's because the ending was a dud. You got to admit. The ending was out of left field.
The ending was so bad. He meets a nice girl, and they're going to go out on a date.
The whole focus of the episode was Jack Klugman, Joey, and his music playing.
Uh-huh.
Yes, he went into the middle ground. He didn't go into one place or the other. He's kind of in between, and it's almost a paradox to the movie It's a Wonderful Life, where James Stewart supposedly jumped off the bridge.
Yeah, but
and
it
then
didn't
the,
have a
the
left
angel.
Left.
Yeah, the angel
left.
Is giving him a second look at life.
Yeah, Clarence.
Yeah, so he goes back into his city and he sees his former wife, but his wife doesn't know him. His mother doesn't know him. The cop doesn't know him. And so he cries out for a second chance, and that last scene where it's snowing. And he's on the bridge, and he says, "Please, Clarence, let me live again. Let me have a second chance." And he does get that chance, and you can see the joy in his life. That was a good movie. It's a Wonderful Life.
It was a good movie. It's a great movie. Yeah.
So in this movie, in this episode, the whole focus is on Joey and his music playing. All right, the angel Gabe says, "All right, you can have your second chance, and just play your trumpet." And go from there. So they should have focused on that. When they brought the girl in at the end and she goes, "I like that music. Can you show me around town?" Now, wait a minute, Lynn. If you're up on a rooftop and you see a guy playing music, are you going to have this guy show you around town at night?
Why not?
Well, it depends. Why not if he's a nice guy?
But Lynn, you don't know.
I mean, he didn't exactly look like a homeless guy, you know.
But Kelly, he could be a stalker. You never know.
Wait a minute. She didn't invite him back to her apartment. They were going to go to a public place together.
All right, what's the difference? Remember the episode Nightmare as a Child and Janice Rule. What's the difference between asking that guy into the apartment or going out with this guy, Joey, out on the town? What's the difference?
Yeah, but Janice Rule was an idiot. She never should have invited that man into her apartment.
Yeah, I mean she did. I mean this woman Nan didn't invite Joey into her apartment. She went up to hear the music and they struck up a conversation.
And she's going to go out on town with him
so
in the middle of the night.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
Anyway,
he was going to take her to the museum. Wasn't it that he was going to take her to the museum?
You know,
what's
right,
wrong
guys.
With going to the museum?
All right,
I mean,
guys.
The one thing if she invited him into her apartment, yeah, you're asking for would-be problems there, but it's called, that's why you initially do things in public places. I mean, come on, Ken. I'm sure that when you first met your wife and you asked her out, she didn't say, sure, come on over to my apartment, Ken. No, you went to a public place, for heaven's sake.
You're losing your argument, Kelly. I'm not going to buy the ending on this one. What the alternate ending should have been that Joey is now a success. He goes back to where he was playing, and he's a hit with the people who he was playing for, and his trumpet playing is even better than it was before when he was drinking. That's the alternate ending. That would have upgraded my rating, but just to have him up on the rooftop and a nice looking girl saying, "Yeah, why don't you show me the town, even though I don't even know you?" So, anyways,
who else are people supposed to meet?
You're the one who's losing the argument here. You're criticizing this woman for going out on a date with him. You married your wife after a month.
The Twilight Zone is supposed to scare me and knock my socks off. The Twilight Zone is not supposed to have two people hand in hand, rosy cheeks, walking into the night singing love songs. That's not the Twilight Zone.
Says who? Rod Serling never said that about his show. He never said, the purpose of my show is to scare the daylights out of everybody and so that they'll be scared to go to bed and turn off the light
That's what I want.
Yes, you have shows like that, but that doesn't mean every single show is like that.
If I want a happy ending, I'm going to watch Alice in Wonderland, okay?
Okay,
that's right. Love is
scary. Go watch Alice in Wonderland.
All right, Robert.
Oh, I love this. Robert. I love when we have fights. I love the fights.
Robert, I read your review, and you gave you weren't too happy with this episode.
I feel
so
the
you
same way
stick.
You do.
All
with
right,
the ending.
Robert, go ahead.
I do feel the same way. I feel, and I do have an alternate ending as well, as Ken did. I just felt that was tacked on, but... Jack Klugman, wonderful actor. I've enjoyed him in the other Twilight Zone episodes. Quincy, The Odd Couple. And, you know, a good pick for this episode. My problem with this episode, and I give it a 2.5 out of 5. My problem with this is I just didn't like the ending of the story. I felt it was something that, you know, Joey was being rewarded for dying, for actually committing suicide. Okay, kid, you committed suicide. Here's your reward. You get a second chance. No, come on. I don't believe that.
I don't think he was trying to commit suicide. I thought he was. He just wasn't paying attention when he walked out of the shop. I didn't think he intentionally walked in front of that truck.
If you look at the scene where he's on the corner after he looked at the trumpet and the price markup on it, he goes to the street sign there, kind of eyes out left and right, sees the truck coming, And if you look at his face, he's thinking to himself, and then he just steps out and the truck hits him. Now, there was intent at that point to kill himself because, and even he said it before and when he met Gabe, that death was better for him at that time until Gabe showed him differently. But I felt instead of giving him a second chance that he should have been punished, and then that the punishment should have been, and as I put on the end of my review, that he should have been one of the angels that was trumpeting the end times of the apocalypse. And that should have been his punishment. It shouldn't have been he'd be able to go back and get his trumpet out and the tacked-on love scene, which
was very tacked
on. Well,
that sure would have been a real feel-good ending, don't you think, Lynn?
Yeah, but it's, but you just said early on that the whole thing that Rod wanted to do was to scare. Where
no,
does love story scare where this
I
ending should have worked?
I said Rod Serling never said that the point of his show was to scare everybody. That was not the point. I mean, he's had plenty of shows on the Twilight Zone where they're not scary, where they're just kind of interesting, uplifting stories, and some of them do have happy endings. And I don't see anything wrong with having an occasional happy ending.
I'm sorry,
I mean,
this may stop at Willoughby.
Why can't you have a happy ending in the Twilight Zone?
You don't have to every single time, and then it's going to be boring.
Folks, hang on. I want to welcome Pednecker74. Thank you for being here, Pednecker. And he says the point of the show, or he or she, says the point of the show was to allow audiences to experience a paranormal reality, not to scare them. Okay.
Thank you.
But love is not always a paranormal reality.
Well, who said it was? He wasn't in the paranormal when he met Nan at the end. He was out of the Twilight Zone after
he was out of the way station. I just feel that this ending was tacked on just to have the sake of a love story and a happy ending. That is the way I feel about the story. If I felt differently and if I felt that it had a happy ending, I would have said, yes, I think that's great. A stop at Willoughby. That's fine. I am happy with the way that episode turned out. This, unfortunately, I am not happy with the way this episode turned out. End of story.
Okay.
For me. For you, I think that's great. If you think it should have a love story, that's fine. But, you know, it's just like I said, I felt that he shouldn't have been rewarded for committing suicide. And I see that from my vision, my view of the story itself. And it was an interesting point that, you know, it brought up that, you know, there also was, you know, future movies and TV shows where, you know, yeah, we do have happy endings to certain situations. But I think the key point with this was also a way station. And it was pointed out in this episode and also some future movies later on. A couple of clips I have. One is, and I think everybody will recognize this one, Heaven Can Wait, 1978.
Oh. I'm not supposed to be here.
But you are here.
Well, you guys made a mistake.
This is insupportable. You're talking to Mr. Jordan.
Well, anybody can make a mistake.
Mr. Jordan, we're due to take off for this.
Yes, I have the situation in hand. Joe, if you don't take your place, the others won't be able to complete their journey. Do you think that's fair?
I'm not supposed to be fair. If this is really heaven, you're supposed to be fair. I didn't make any mistake.
This is not heaven. This is a way station, and there is no mistake.
I want to check out on Joseph Pendleton. When is he due to arrive at this way station?
Sir, I don't understand. A checkout? Why?
The likelihood of one individual being right increases in direct proportion to the intensity with which others are trying to prove him wrong.
Pendleton Joseph, due to arrive 10:17 a.m., March 20th of the year 2025.
Sir, I really can't believe it. I took him out just before the accident. There's no way that car could have messed
what?
It. It's not possible.
You're not supposed to take him out before. You're supposed to wait for the outcome.
Yes, sir, I know, but I was so sure. And besides, it looked like it was going to be so painful.
Wait a minute, you saying...
Is this your first assignment as an escort?
Yes, sir.
Haven't you learned the rules of probability and outcome? Aren't you aware that every question of life and death remains a probability until the outcome?
Hey, so he jumped the gun. Anybody could have done that. Just put me back where you found me and we'll forget the whole thing, huh?
This man must be put back into his body at once.
And I bring up the point of the way station situation. Now, he wasn't in heaven or he wasn't in hell, but kind of in a limbo situation with that. That was also Buck Henry and early Warren Beatty in that movie, which I kind of liked.
That was a great, great, great movie.
Heaven Can Wait.
Oh, and absolutely fabulous movie.
And another point I wanted to bring up, too, about a way station is a movie called The Heavenly Kid. And it was 1985. And we kind of have a little introduction by Robert Ebert.
Movie critic Roger Ebert tells us what we can expect from The Heavenly Kid.
The kid on the left side of your screen is a leather-jacketed teenager from the 1950s who was killed while trying to imitate James Dean in Rebel Without a Cause and driving his truck over the side of a cliff. The kid on the right up there is a modern teenager. And The Heavenly Kid, the kid from the 50s, has been brought back to Earth to try to straighten him out. Here's the scene where he gets the rules from the representative of God up in heaven.
To tell you the truth, I was expecting something different. You know, like angels and harps and that kind of stuff.
Oh, no, that's in uptown.
Well, you don't mean I...
No. This is midtown. It's sort of a way station. It's just temporary. Oh.
So I'll be moving on.
Not that easy, Bob. The big chief doesn't think you're quite ready yet.
So what does he want me to do?
Carry out an assignment, something especially suited to your abilities.
His mission is to go back to Earth and help out another teenage kid who was about to get in the same kind of fix that he did. So he goes back to Earth, and his notion of how a modern teenager should act is he ought to act just like a tough teenager from the 1950s.
I don't know if
and
I've
that
ever
was from
seen
the late
one.
Great Robert Ebert, right?
Yeah, I think did he pass away? I think he's just sick.
I think he did.
Sick.
I
did
think he?
He
did. Maybe not. But I thought that I thought it was Siskel and Ebert. Now I know Siskel passed away.
Yeah, he died of brain cancer years ago. But the point I'm trying to make with those clips and with this episode is just the setting of the way station, and that the determination of if the person goes to heaven, go to hell. We see these in Rod's previous episodes, and later on down the road we'll see that as well. But like I said, unfortunately, I just wasn't too happy with this episode. I give it a 2.5. It's above average for me, and I'm going to pass it on to Bobby.
All right, thank you, Robert. I'm not going to get involved in this debate about whether or not Jack Klugman's character deserves to get a second chance. I'll let God decide that. I went to the Internet Movie Database before the show began, and just about all of the episodes are there in one form or another, and people generally write short reviews. There were only six people who commented on this episode, and the overall rating they gave it was 7.1. That's 7.1 out of 10. And everybody liked it, and everybody points out Jack Klugman in particular. Now, I'm afraid I have to join the chorus when it comes to changing reviews, because in my original review on the board, I gave it a 4, but that I'm going to go back in and push that down to 3, because I'm afraid that my bias in favor of Jack Klugman is showing on that, because the episode really doesn't deserve a 4. I would have to agree with Ken that in many respects, the episode itself is really very boring. Very boring and very mundane, and nothing happens. And given the little bit that happens, it could have run for about 10 minutes. It doesn't have to run for 25. And there's a lot of time being wasted with watching him walk around and be miserable. And, you know, so there really isn't much of a story there. But Klugman makes the story, as he has in everything he's ever done. And Jack Klugman could read the phone book and make it interesting. And when you watch Jack Klugman, you should notice something else about him, not just his acting. And that is, he probably does more with facial expressions than any actor around. He doesn't just, I mean, a lot of actors, you know, can emote and get very emotional and do mind-boggling scenes. But not many actors can do it with their face, and he does. And I think that's what makes a difference. Whether he's doing The Odd Couple or whether he's doing anything serious, And because I'm personally older than dirt, I can remember when Jack Klugman was all the way back in the 50s in the movie 12 Angry Men. And he was very memorable in that movie, even though he's outstripped by a glamorous cast of other actors. Henry Fonda's in it, and a lot of people who at that time in their careers were way ahead of him. And yet he has a small but memorable part as one of the jurors. And he does everything with facial expressions. He really gets himself into it. When you watch him act, you get the feeling that he's really into the story. He's not just doing a job. He's not just being an actor. He really has thrown himself into it. And I think that's why I haven't liked everything he's ever done, but he's always fascinating to watch. In this particular episode, he's the only reason to watch it. There really isn't any other reason. And so, I gave it a 4 at the beginning, but there's just not enough there to justify. One of the people, by the way, at IMDb, called it one of the 10 most memorable episodes of the entire series, which is absurd, of course. As far as the ending is concerned, I agree, but for different reasons. I don't know. You know whether or not he deserved to have a happy ending or not. But the Rod Serling wrote this, and he went a little bit overboard. He knows better than that. The story is really about whether or not this man is going to pick up on his career again or just give up. It's about that. So the end of the story has to do with whether he took up the trumpet again. Bringing a woman in out of nowhere has nothing to do with the story. If you want to do a love story, do a love story. If you want to do a story about a man who's lonely and miserable and has nothing in his life and meets a woman who apparently may be good for him, then do that. But it really isn't necessary in this story. I got nothing out of that. I would agree that in today's world, and indeed in the world of 1960, no woman should be up on a rooftop with a man she doesn't even know. I mean, that's deadly right there alone. But that's besides the point. The fact is, we don't need that. We don't need that in the story. It is a tacked on happy ending. I think there's a deliberate intention on Rod Serling's part to do a feel-good story. That's what he set out to do. By making it so miserable at the beginning and then turning it around and saying, you know what? No matter how late in life it is, you can turn it around and be happy if you just get your priorities straight. And so that's what he does. But the story itself is really pretty tedious, to be honest with you. And I don't know that without Jack Klugman in it, I really wonder whether or not I could have sat through it or not. There's an amusing part in the story for me that nobody's brought up, and that is that at the end of it, when he gets hit by the truck again and gets to come back, the truck driver jumps out of the truck and pulls him right up off the sidewalk to tell him, to plead with him not to call the police or anything. And if you hit somebody with your car and they're laying on the sidewalk, if you pick them right up off the sidewalk without knowing they have internal injuries, they'll die for sure. So that was pretty stupid right there. But the rest of it is just meanders along. It just goes absolutely nowhere. Also, one more thing in his review on the board, Ken had mentioned something about how if you're going to bring Gabriel back, why not do a story about Gabriel? I mean, why didn't he ask him questions like, did you know Adam and Eve, and so forth and so on? But again, that's not what the story is about. It's not about Gabriel. It's about Jack Klugman's character. Not about that. If you want to do a story about Gabriel coming back to Earth, do a story about that. But it's only about a man who is a good trumpet player and gives up for whatever reasons, or a multitude of reasons, and then comes back at the end and gets a second chance. As far as it being a copy of It's a Wonderful Life, every movie ever made has been a copy of A Wonderful Life. I mean, there are countless movies, as Robert has just shown, that have to do with getting a second chance, coming back, so forth and so on. I think the difference between this story and It's a Wonderful Life is A Wonderful Life has some humor in it. There are some humorous moments. It's a serious story, but there's some lighthearted moments too. And this is just a very downbeat story. And it's a little bizarre. Anybody who's been in real life knows that you just can't turn on a dime and decide, all right, I've changed my mind. I'm going to give it a second chance, and then everything falls into place for you. Not necessarily. I mean, Klugman's character could have decided to take the trumpet back up again, but maybe nobody wanted any part of him now. Maybe he couldn't get a job because he's already proven that he's not reliable. So there's a lot of different shadings that could have been in it, but Klugman makes the story, and that's the reason to watch it. But one of the top 10 never. And in our group, when I created the poll section, I deliberately left it. I don't close any polls down. None of the polls will ever close. Because if you want to go back and change your vote, you can. Everybody's taking Ken to task for changing his vote, but that's what it's all about. Because you get a different idea later on. You may see it again. You may read other reviews. You hear other people talking like we do on this show. And that could convince you otherwise. So I just want everybody to know that it's perfectly legitimate to say to change your vote. And that's exactly why all of the polls are still open. And I intend to, when I get a chance, to pull it back to 3. Even that may be a stretch, but I wouldn't go any further down than that.
I've done that in the past. So,
that's
know,
what I'm saying. It's deliberately set up that way.
Yeah, I've done that in the past. I've watched an episode again and said, you know, I mean, I've watched them all a million times, but, you know, I would watch it again and say, well, you know what, maybe I shouldn't have given it such a high rating, or maybe I shouldn't have given it such a low rating.
I've seen many movies countless times, and then come back later on and watch them again after a few years and said, I can't imagine what I ever saw in this movie because I'm not getting anything out of it like I did the first time. And some movies are only good the first time. And then you get something out of it, and then later on, some last forever. You can watch, there are movies that I can watch over and over again, no problem. And others. This story, I think, is one of the more forgettable ones in the series. When you get to the end of the series and you want to talk about acting, you can pick out the good actors. But when you pick out a story, this isn't going to be at the top. All right, Lynn, that's all I got.
All right,
Bobby.
Dave.
I had a question I want to ask you. Do you feel that Rod felt with this episode that he was going too dark, and that's why he felt maybe it should have been lightened up at the end?
The only thing that I'll say about that, in the world of TV, as anybody in Hollywood will tell you, I've never been there, but anybody in the business will tell you, is that you don't want to leave audiences with a miserable feeling at the end of a story. People will take that out on you. I mean, I've read that many times. If you're watching a series and there are too many downbeat stories that end badly, some people will say, you know what, I don't need to feel this depressed. And they'll take it out on you. It's possible that he thought that may be going too far, but in my opinion, if he felt that way, then he should have lightened the atmosphere at the beginning and not, you know, to make a deadly serious story that's very, very depressing, and then halfway through writing it decide, oh, you know what, this isn't even bothering me. I think I'll tackle on this happy ending at the end where the guy gets to play the trumpet and he gets the girl too, is the wrong way to go. Yeah, and to answer your question, yeah, I think there may have been a little bit of a change of heart there, and he may have, as he was writing it, maybe went back and read what he had written and decided audiences weren't quite prepared to see this much of a depressing ending. So he had him come back. That's entirely possible. But, you know, you got to watch what you do on TV because this is still early in the series. It's still the first season. And people might look at that and go, my God, I mean, do I really need to tune in and get this depressed? So, yeah, I think that there's a real possibility that he cut back on it. But I think he went too far. He just went too far. And the girl at the end is unnecessary. It's about a man playing the trumpet. Do a love story in another episode. Leave that out of it. All righty.
All right, Dave, what do you have to say about this?
Lots.
Gosh, excellent.
Stuff to
say. Let's hear what you have to say.
Well, first of all, I would agree with most people. Jack Klugman is a really great person to watch. And now, that might have been tainted with some people later because he tends to get typecast. He was always playing that same, you know, man that was, you know, easily excitable and would go on a rage and this, that and the other. But here we see him in very early stages. I love the reference, of course, to the 12 Angry Man film, which was great. But what I really loved about his acting in this was his acting with the instrument. I thought he convinced me he could play that trumpet. The way he wetted his lips, he takes the mouth, because most trumpeteers, as far as I understand it, perhaps Kelly, being a musician, will be able to echo this, is that, you know, the actual mouth part, the part that they put in, they keep that individually, it's separate from the trumpet, like they did on this, and he wets it, and he uses his lips properly, and I thought the way he acted, I actually believed he was a trumpet player. So that's one thing. I like the switcheroo, as it were, because everybody's thinking, oh, he's dead. He hasn't realised he's dead. And then we get the switch on us because he's not dead, as it's explained. The people there are dead. He's still in this limbo world where the choice is open to him. And then I think this is something that... Two things, I think, that may be missed by the speaker so far. One is that he actually says the opposite of what somebody said. He says that he can't play the music without the drink at the beginning. That's what he actually says. He says, "But I need the drink to make the music." And that's why the bit at the end I thought was brilliant, because after the whole story plays out, and he's come to terms with his life, he's virtually settled for what he wants, he's not seeking things, he can actually play the trumpet without getting drunk. The girl, she's not there trying to pick him up. There's washing hanging there. She's up there on the roof collecting her washing. She doesn't ask him to take her out on the town that night. She's saying she's new in the town and would, you know, she liked his music. He seemed a nice man to her, and she's lonely, and she has to show
her
around.
He was actually in her space.
Yeah.
He was actually in her space. She wasn't in his space.
Yeah, and it wasn't talking about going out at night or whatever. Two other things. The other character who played Abe, John Anderson, and I think certainly Robert will know that he played a marvellous role in one of the Star Trek Next Generation episodes where he played a very old man, a survivor, an omnipotent...
Who was that, Dave?
The tall man who played Gabriel.
Oh, okay.
The 6'5" tall actor, John Anderson. And he's played some
five?
Very... Yeah,
he's
6'5" and a half. Yeah. He's played Abe Lincoln a couple of times. Now, he was a great casting for that. And the other thing is, I think a lot of people may have forgotten the title of this show, Passage for a Trumpet. I think basically a lot of people were saying, well, why did this guy deserve to get, you know, the second chance? Well, he got the second chance because Gabe had a soft spot for him. Gabe is a well-known trumpet player. I mean, that's... So the point is, he's getting a bit of a free passage for a trumpet from one trumpet player to the other. He's basically, you know, giving him a second chance because he appreciates the skill in which he can play the instrument. So I think... I don't think anybody else mentioned that, but that was the feeling I got. He may not have deserved the chance, but as one musician to another, and because of his talent, he was getting the benefit of the doubt. And so I think that the Abe character was quite critical to it in some points. So a number of things. And the last thing, it reminded me of the bit on the rooftop at the end. It reminded me of the ending of the Big Tall Wish,
which was
the boxer one, where...
They were both on the rooftop, weren't they?
Right, but he couldn't take the second chance he had that the boy offered him. This time it did. And I think as many times as I think the people here, I've not been on the show so often, but a number of times Rob Sterling has used the same storyline twice, but each time he's done it a second time, he's put that second twist in it, or he's reversed the story roles. So I think this has been written almost as a back-to-back or a twin story to the Big Tall Wish. So quite a few things, I think, there.
Now, Dave... all right. Again, I have to remind you, and do I have to do this again? It is Rod Serling, not Rod Sterling.
Okay.
All right.
Duly noted. but I would give it a rate. I would give it a rating of about 3, 3.5. Again, I do realise what has been said about you know, you could have condensed this story down to 10 minutes, but I think this has been the biggest problem with nearly all the Twilight Zones is, you know, some of the stories, they're stretching out to fit 25 minutes. Others really need another 10 minutes to really develop them. I think that has always been the case because it's basically short form fiction.
So you don't think at the end that the woman was necessary?
I think she was necessary, yeah.
Yeah, I think the woman
because
he
stopped. He refers right at the beginning. The only thing that keeps him going.
He says, "I don't even have a girl."
He has a rotten flat and this, that, and the other, and he has the trumpet, but he'd lost the confidence in even that, and he could only now play it when he was drunk. All this had happened. He's now on the roof and realizes that he has got this gift. Somebody is like, you know, Gabriel realizes and acknowledges he's got a talent, and therefore he's got that self-belief again. And as anybody, well, I mean, I'm not a woman, but I would think most women would tell you, you know,
a man
who's got some pride in himself or whatever is more likely to be attractive to a woman than some self-pitying person. And the fact that he's there, she sees him not as the person we've seen at the beginning of the program. She sees him as a man content with himself, relaxed with himself, with a skill, just playing for the sheer love of the instrument and the love of the music, and that endears her to him. And therefore, she strikes up the conversation on her own rooftop area. She's not in her own personal flat. She's not invited him to a flat. She's not invited him out of the town. She's just drawn to him through the music.
But Dave?
Yep.
If we're going to do that, then this should have been something that should have done at the beginning. When she said the line that she just moved in town, maybe she moved in town that night before he goes into the truck and dies and gets to 710.
He wouldn't have done it then.
The thing is, she could have been observing him. She could have walked by the club, seen, you know, what situation he looked, and then going to the end to where the rooftop, just the sense that she recognized him the first time and then see a change in him in the second time could have been clearly a part of that story itself.
It could have been done that way, but by the way I think of it, it was done, the story was done, it's darkest before the dawn, and he'd gone through a long dark night of the soul, and because he was now content with himself, the thing appeared. I mean, it's often said, you know, people who go out, people who look desperate don't get.
Good point. I like that. Very
good
point,
Dave. Did you want to make any comment about the chase or the last episode?
Oh, yeah, the one you missed. Yeah.
Oh, right, yeah. This is the one where the chap sells this potion for $1.
The chap. The
chap. For $1,000.
But it's typical, isn't it? Yeah. This smothering love that this girl has for him, even though he desired her come what may, he couldn't even read a book. He couldn't do anything. She was at his. She would want to do everything. And it reminded me a little bit about the one that was alluded to earlier, the chap that was in this apartment who died, and he thought he'd gone to heaven, and it turned out it was the other place, because they couldn't say it. And they seemed to tire of it very quickly. Again, this was the short-form factor of the storyline, but he seemed to very quickly tire of this girl's undying devotion to him. But, of course, the kicker on that one was the fact that she then reveals that she's pregnant.
My God, yeah, at the end, he was ready to give her the elixir. He was ready to give her the elixir to make everything stop. And then she reveals that she's pregnant. And he drops it on the floor. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm not too sure about the sentence where he says, well, I could have never have used it on her anyway, but... I would have put that. I would have perhaps rated that as a more light-hearted episode and given it maybe two and a half to three maybe. This
but
one
do
I,
you,
I'd rate
do you
three
think
to three
if
and a half.
If she wasn't pregnant, do you think he would have used that elixir on her?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. It's only because she said she was pregnant, and then all of a sudden everything changed, and he dropped it on the floor. He said, "You know, what am I going to do now?" You know?
Yeah.
He probably thought it was better than that, than to have to go through child support to claim the kid.
Exactly.
I'll put up with this love. I'm going to have to pay the child support.
Hey, Dave.
Yep.
Ken.
The chaser, according to our Yahoo group on the Twilight Zone, the chaser was rated the worst episode of season one. Do you agree with that, or is there another episode that's even worse in season one for you?
Wow.
I'm going to be controversial. I don't think there's been a bad one yet. So I must be easily pleased. I wouldn't have rated anything below two. I think I would say this was about two and a half. The chase was about two and a half, maybe, because it was probably the most predictable
Yeah, it was very predictable. Because you knew right from the beginning, when he got that elixir that was going to make her fall in love with him, you kind of knew. I mean, it was inevitable that she was going to fall desperately in love with him, and she was going to smother him with love, and he was not going to be able to handle it. He was not going to be able to take it, you know? So, I don't know. Ken, I would have to, think back on all the episodes from season one. I don't know if I would call it the worst. I don't know if I would call it, I'd have to look back. But yeah, it was one of the worst, definitely one of the worst. I don't know if I would call it the worst, but I have to look back on the other episodes to see which one I think would be worse.
So that comes back to an argument. Let's say 100 people attend a rock concert, and 90 out of the 100 people say the music was bad, yet only 10 people say the music is good. So who are we to believe? Do we believe the 90, or do we believe the 10? So that's where the question is.
That's a tough question. I'd have to think back on all the episodes from season one, and I'm not sure this would be close to one of the worst. I'm not sure if I would call it the worst. I have to look back at all the other episodes. But yeah, this would probably be at the bottom of the barrel.
I think it comes down to personal preference for the person. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And for people listening later, you're referring to the Chase one there, not the one we're talking about tonight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The one we're talking about tonight is definitely, I don't know. I mean, it's pretty, the Passage for Trumpet, I would not say it's definitely down at the bottom of the barrel. No, definitely not at the bottom of the barrel. But, The Chaser, yeah. Yeah, that would be down there. That would be down there at the bottom. Bobby, what do you think?
It's horrible.
There you go.
It's unanimous.
I think that it's not so much horrible as the fact is that most people watching it could have written it themselves, you know. And what I think most of the people want here is to be both entertained and misdirected in some way, so that when there is the switch, I mean, I thought it was quite good in this episode, the trumpet one, where we find that it's the other people that are dead and not the main character. I thought that was a nice little switch. It's obvious that people see different emphasis. I thought the very fact that it was Gabe who was the person that was overseeing this transition for him was completely an important part of it, because, you know, as another one musician to another, he was giving him some slack, or whatever you call it.
It gave him some leeway. Gave him. But, you know, the thing with me, as far as the Twilight Zone, is you want to be surprised at the end. You definitely want to be surprised, and you want an ending that's going to make you go, wow, I didn't see that coming, you know. And with Passage for Trumpet and with the Chaser and all that, you know, you kind of, I don't know Passage for Trumpet, but with the Chaser, you kind of knew what the ending was going to be, and maybe with Passage for Trumpet, you did kind of know what the ending was going to be like. But, see, the thing with me, and I think Ken feels the same way, when I watch a Twilight Zone episode, at the end, I want to be surprised. I want to just say, whoa, I didn't see that coming. Am I right, Ken?
Absolutely, and I want a Rel Witten story, and, you know, the classics that I've rated, you'll see what I'm looking for. I mean, you can get into all areas of life. I don't care what field you're in. Just give me a good story and make it worth my 30 minutes of time. That's all I ask.
Well, the idea that Stop It Will Be is what you're kind of referring to as a, you know, didn't see it happening
that
at the end.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was such a surprise, and it wasn't so much that I was surprised that he was going to commit suicide, but the thing with that one was when I saw the truck that said Willoughby and Son's Funeral Home.
I remember that really surprised me at the end. I was like, wow, that's bizarre, the first time I saw that.
Didn't that blow you away? I mean, I was totally knocked out by that. And I was like, wow, I was not expecting that. I kind of thought toward the end that something was going to happen, he was going to commit suicide or whatever. But when I saw that truck that said Willoughby and Sons, oh, my God, I was blown away. What, Dave, weren't you blown away when you saw the end of that?
I thought it was very neat, yeah. But even that great story, I thought, had a little bit of padding because he was sort of had like three chances to get off the train. But it certainly was a good story. I'm trying
absolutely.
To think back on. I mean, I quite like the Boxer Wish one, but I think probably that was probably the weakest one. The Big Tall Wish was probably the weakest one of the season, I would think.
You
when
know
I think
what?
About it.
You know what? I tend to agree with you on that. Because I really didn't like that episode. I don't know why. To me, it seemed like a Hallmark Hall of Fame sort of a story that I just couldn't get into. I mean, it was fine, but it was sweet, it was cute, but, you know, at the end, I really didn't see the whole Twilight Zone aspect of it. Now, I know Kelly disagrees with it. I know Kelly loved this episode, but that's okay, though. That's okay, because we have to have varying opinions. But
agreed,
You know, Lynn,
are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
We're approaching an hour. Don't you think we ought to wrap this up at some point?
Oh, I guess. I guess.
Well, we got four more.
What's
we
our
have
next
four more to go.
Episode?
And then I'll be it for season one.
All right, now here's the thing. Here's the thing, guys. I'm moving out to Seattle, Washington on the 17th of July. And we may have to skip an episode. We might have to skip a show because I'm going to be setting up a new computer out there and everything. So we will either do our next show on... We might have to do our next show on
August
1st.
Or July 31st.
No, August the 7th.
I'm sorry.
I won't be there on the 31st, so it better be August the 7th if you want me on the show.
Oh, right.
Where would you be, Bob, on the 31st?
No, we have things to do. It'll be August 7th. Trust me.
All right. Our next show will be August 7th.
Which episode are we talking about?
What is the next episode?
Beaver.
Is it Beaver? Oh, you gotta be kidding me. The first show I come out there is Beavis.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I'll be on vacation, so I may or may not be able to call in.
You probably be better not to call in, yeah.
Well, you never know.
This is not one that I think you would want to call in for. Enjoy your vacation, really. I mean, this is not an episode that you would want to call in for. All right.
Yeah, it's
all
episode 33, Mr. Beavis is the next one.
All right, we'll
one.
Do Mr. Beavis on August 7th, is it, Bob?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Okay, August 7th, I will have my computer all set up at that point. I'm going to call Comcast. We're going to do that whole thing. And, of course, I'll be sending invites out to everyone, letting you know that the show is ready to go. So we'll do that. All right. All right, so I think we are pretty much done here. And does anyone else have anything to say?
Mm-hmm.
No. All right. Dave, I want you to be there on August 7th. That's my first show when I'm out in Seattle.
I'll try and be there. And just for Kelly, I would say that when I said that was a weaker show, I don't think any of them have been poor. It's just sort of varying degrees of quality, I think. I haven't really seen a poor one, but I'm easily pleased.
Oh, hey, that's good to know.
If you run into Kelsey Grammer, say hi to him for me.
Oh, I will.
Kelsey Grammer doesn't live here, dear.
I know you don't. It's a joke, Kelly.
They only filmed, in all those years of Frasier, they only filmed one episode here in Seattle.
Wasn't it in Vancouver that they filmed?
No, they filmed it on a Hollywood soundstage.
Wait a minute.
In California.
I just showed Bob the other day. I have a T-shirt that says Frasier on it, and it's got all the characters of Frasier. Kelsey Grammer, Niles, Jane leaves, his father, Roz, and
Niles' brother, yeah.
Yep, and Eddie. Eddie the dog is on the back of my T-shirt. So I have that T-shirt, and that's going out there with me. So they better not, and they're all holding umbrellas, different colored umbrellas. So it better not rain that much out there, Kelly.
Well, it's not raining here today. It's actually quite nice.
Well, it was raining here today, so I guess I can't say anything.
Oh, I guess we sent the rain to you.
Thank you.
Okay, have we stopped recording?
Nope, we're getting ready right now. Okay, we're all done, and thanks everybody for being here.
Push the button.
I'm pushing the button. Okay. Stop recording and terminate call. Well, if I terminate the call, I can't talk to you, Robert, right?
No, you can stop the recording.
Okay, stop recording.
Just don't terminate.
Okay, stop
it.
Recording.